This is Henry Simon, bringing you another story from my files here at the Missing Persons Bureau.
In these stories of the Missing Persons Bureau, dramatized for Henry Simon by Ross Napier, names and addresses have for obvious reasons been changed. In one moment, the search for Russell Burden, address unknown. And here again is Henry Simon.
There's an old Chinese proverb. A man takes a drink, the drink takes a drink, then the drink takes the man. To the moderate drinker, of course, this is a fallacy. To the non-drinker, it's a warning. To the heavy drinker, a tangible threat. And to the alcoholic, an epitaph. To illustrate this latter fact, I've chosen to relate the case of Russell Burden. And to it, I intend to apply the proverb, a man takes a drink.
Well, Russ, old boy, what's it to be?
Tomato juice, thanks.
Sure you wouldn't rather milk?
Well, I'm not a drinking man, Fred.
And it's time you became one. You don't know what you're missing, old boy. Come on now, one won't hurt you.
No, really,
Oh, look here, I'll be offended if you don't. I mean to say, hang it all. We don't run into each other like this every day.
Well, perhaps a small one.
That's the spirit. Now, what'll you have?
Oh, anything will do. Whatever you're having.
And that was the beginning. Harmless enough. Or was it? In the passage of the next few months, Russell Burden acquired a taste for alcohol. He found it soothed his nerves when he was on edge, gave him confidence when he lacked it, and generally brought him out of himself. And so, the drink took a drink.
What's it to be, Mr. Burden?
Same again, say the old girl. You just keep on filling them up till I say when.
But unfortunately, Russell Burden didn't say when nearly often enough, or soon enough. And as time went by, he began to drink more and more. Until inevitably the day came when the drink took the man.
The thing. Barbara! Barbara! Where the devil are you, woman?
Ross! For heaven's sake, awake the children.
Good. It's time I had a little talk with them. Acquaint them with the facts of life.
Oh, Ross, what's happened to you? You've come home like this every night for the past month. It can't go on, Ross. If you won't think
be
of me...
Be quiet, but... woman, be quiet. I'm in no mood to listen to your sniveling. What I need is a drink.
No.
Get out of my way.
You're not having any more.
I said get out of my way.
Oh, please, Russ.
Next time, do as I tell you.
There won't be a next time.
Better not be. Now go to bed.
I'm leaving you, Russ.
You what?
You heard me. First thing in the morning, I'm taking the children and we're getting out of here.
Don't talk like a fool.
I mean it. I won't have them growing up in this environment. For their father, a drunkard. You're determined to go to the devil? Very well, then go. But don't expect us to come with you.
You sent for me, sir?
Yes. Sit down, Burden.
Thank you.
I won't waste time with unnecessary preamble. I dare say you know what it is I wish to discuss.
I can't say I do, sir. No.
Your sales have fallen off over the past few months.
Well, there's always a slump at this time of the year.
In this case, the slump is due to you and to you alone.
Me?
Or perhaps I should say, to your drinking habits.
Well, now, wait a minute.
No, Burden. I've waited long enough. It's now my painful duty to inform you that the company has no further need of your services.
No further need?
In short, we cannot afford to employ an alcoholic.
But this is the only job I've ever known. I've been with the company for 17 years.
And you've been married for 11. But that didn't stop your wife from leaving you.
You know about that?
Yes. I've known about it for some weeks, and I've known why. But
you can't just dismiss me like
a... I'm sorry, Burden, believe me, but I've no choice. When you confined your drinking to the evenings, it was none of my business, and I remained silent. But when you commenced to disappear for days on end, it became a different matter. I warned you, as subtly as I could, that it couldn't go on, but you chose to ignore me. Last week you were off for 4 days. The week before, you didn't come in at all.
I was ill.
I don't doubt it. You still are. And you'll remain so till you stop drinking. When that time comes, we may have another talk. But for the present, I have nothing further to say.
Russell Burden, you have been charged with drunkenness and disorderly behavior. How do you plead? Guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
This is not the first time you've appeared in this court on similar charges, Mr. Burden. Nor indeed is it the second or the third. In the past, you've been let off with a fine and a warning. Well, I intend to warn you once more, but for the last time. Come before me again and you'll find yourself behind bars.
It was in the April of 1954 that I first heard of Russell Burden, under circumstances which, to say the least, were unusual. It began with a phone call. Yes?
Oh, Mr. Simon?
Speaking.
I'd like to make an appointment to see you, if I may, as soon as possible.
Well, as it happens, I have some free time this afternoon. What's it about, exactly?
An acquaintance of mine. He's disappeared.
I see. Would 3 o'clock be suitable?
Certainly. I'll be there on the dot.
I don't believe I caught your name.
I'm known as Frank.
Frank?
In the organization I represent, only Christian names are used.
Oh? What organization is that?
It's called Alcoholics Anonymous.
I'd heard of Alcoholics Anonymous many times in the past, of course, and I knew something about its work. I was therefore very curious to learn the nature of Frank's business. And so it was at 3 o'clock that same afternoon that I rose from my desk as a large man, well over 6 feet and built in proportion, with sandy hair and a ruddy complexion, was ushered into my office.
How do you do, Mr. Simon?
Mr. Frank, please.
Oh, thank you. Oh, breaking in a new pair of shoes is good to take the weight off them. I know you're a busy man, Mr. Simon, so I'll get straight to the point of my visit. As I mentioned over the phone, I belong to Alcoholics Anonymous. In short, I'm a reformed alcoholic, dedicated to the task of reforming others who've fallen by the wayside.
A highly commendable occupation.
Yes, well, it's not an occupation exactly. Let's say it's a sideline, something which I occupy my spare hours with. There are many others like me, thousands, in fact, here in England and abroad. And we function in a simple yet highly systematic fashion. At any time of the day or night, we're apt to receive a phone call from headquarters directing us to the aid of anyone who desires our help. And having established contact, we place ourselves completely at their disposal. Whenever the craving for a drink comes upon them, they send for us. And we do what we can to dispel it. But, no doubt you're familiar with the general procedure.
Vaguely, yes.
Surnames are never used, either by us or by those we assist. In that way, of course, our anonymity is preserved.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the man I want you to find is a confirmed alcoholic. For the past 4 months since he enlisted the aid of AA, he's been known to me simply as Russell, but under the circumstances, I found it necessary to ascertain his full name, which I pass on to you in absolute confidence.
Yes, of course.
His name is Burden. B-U-R-D-E-N.
Russell Burden.
Yes. To give you a brief history of his alcoholic decline, in the September of last year, due entirely to his excessive drinking, his wife left him and took with her their 2 children. 3 weeks later, he lost his job as sales manager with a cosmetics firm. In the ensuing November, he was arrested 3 times for drunkenness and disorderly practices. Then again in December, when he was warned that the next time he appeared in court, he'd receive a prison sentence. A few days after that, following the effect of a particularly heavy drinking bout, he contacted us. I was assigned to the case, and I found him to be a man of both education and character on the verge of delirium tremens. I immediately referred him to the doctor who'd cured me 18 months before. Well, just as I was convinced that we were on the eve of total victory, he disappeared. And I've neither seen nor heard from him since.
You feel that he's gone back?
I know how easy it is to do, Mr. Simon. I went back myself. But I was pulled from the mire in time before too much damage had been done.
Have you been in touch with his wife?
Yes, several times. She's heard nothing.
Where was he living?
He had a flat in Earl's Court. He hasn't been sighted there for more than 10 days.
When was the last time you saw him and where?
At his flat, about a fortnight ago.
And when did you discover he was missing?
Earlier this week, when I called on him. The caretaker let me in. There was an empty whiskey bottle on the kitchen table. It's a familiar pattern, Mr. Simon. A man gets back on his feet only to be swept off them again before he's found his bearings. I've seen it so often. Apart from experiencing it myself.
What other inquiries have you made?
Well, none of any consequence. It's difficult to know where to start. Perhaps Mrs. Burden may be able to guide you in some way. The poor woman, she's extremely bitter about it all. Not quite so bitter as my wife, perhaps, but... Well...
Did your wife leave you?
It's because she did that I finally came to my senses. Unfortunately, it was a little late. I'd been drinking for 15 days on end. I collapsed on the front steps of our home. When I regained consciousness, I was in hospital. I asked to see her. And they told me she was dead. She put her head in a gas oven.
Henry Simon returns to continue this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
As he spoke of his wife's suicide, brought about by his own addiction to alcohol, it became apparent that Frank had identified Russell Burden with himself. They had both been married men, they had both had children, and they had both sunk to approximately the same depths. Following his departure some 40 minutes later, I summoned Agent Bob Hunter to my office, and after briefing him on the case, I dispatched him to the home of our quarry's mother-in-law, where Barbara Burden and her 2 children were staying. A capable-looking woman, the attractive qualities in her face marred by furrows born of worry, Mrs. Burden treated the agent to a mixed reception.
I know I'm being callous, Mr. Hunter, and perhaps a little heartless. But where Russ is concerned, I simply don't care anymore. If I never see him again, it'll be too soon.
Well, I guess that's your business, Mrs. Burden, but right now it's my business to find him, and I intend to do just that. I understand you left him in September last year?
Yes.
Have you seen him since then?
Oh, a number of times. He kept coming here, trying to persuade me to return to him. And not once was he sober. The last time he was crying drunk. He made all sorts of threats and got quite violent. My mother finally had to phone the police.
When was this?
A few weeks before Christmas.
And you've not heard from him since that time?
No.
You didn't know he was in the hospital?
Not till Frank told me.
Do you know where his drinking haunts were?
Well, at one time or another, he frequented every bar in London. Quite a few of them refused to serve him.
There was nowhere in particular.
Only that place in Charing Cross Road.
Which place?
Oh, the Crown, I think it's called. He phoned up from there quite a lot to say he wouldn't be home. More than once I had to go and collect him in the car.
What about his friends, his drinking companions? Have you got any idea who they were?
Most of his old friends have disowned him long since.
Well, surely some of them must have stuck.
Well, there's George Atworth.
Atworth?
Yes, they were at Oxford together. They rode in the 8s. He's about the only real friend Russ ever had.
Do you know where I could reach him?
Yes, he works for his father in the city. Some sort of importing business, Atworth and Sons. It's quite well known.
Yep. Anybody else?
No one that I can think of. Oh, there were the old ones, the sponges and the hangers-on. The ones who urged him to drink up and then sat back and let him spend his money on them. If it comes to that, they're the ones who got him into this state in the first place. And they'd be the last to help him now he's down.
Yeah.
But I refuse to let myself feel sorry for him. He's one of them himself. He's just not worth it.
At the city offices of Atworth and Sons, Hunter sought out George Atworth, a pipe-smoking, pleasant-faced man in his mid-30s, with dark hair brushed back flat, after the style set by Rudolph Valentino in the days of the Silent Scream.
I'm afraid not, Mr. Hunter. I haven't seen him in 2 or 3 weeks.
But you have seen him since he left the hospital.
And he phoned up to tell me he was a new man. I had dinner with him at the flat, and I must say he looked better than he's ever looked. I wouldn't have recognized him as the same person I'd put up bail for on 3 occasions.
Oh, you got him out, huh?
Yes, became one of my regular chores.
Oh, tell me, was it you who put him on to AA?
More or less. I was at him for months to call them. Not that I've had any experience with them myself, but I knew a girl who was a member.
Did you ever do the rounds with him, you know, drinking rounds?
Yes, I tagged along with him a few times, trying to get him home, waiting to catch him when he fell, you know, the sort of thing.
Yeah.
He was the worst darn soak I've ever seen. The funny part about it is, a year or two ago, he wouldn't touch a drink. On the rare occasions he went into a pub, he'd have a tomato juice or lemon squash. Nothing alcoholic, not even beer.
He didn't approve?
No, I think he was a little scared. With good reason, I might add. Both his father and his grandfather were drunkards before him.
Ooh, in the family, huh?
From way back.
Well, it certainly is a tragic business.
Now look, if you like, I'll take you on a grand tour of the pubs he used to go to. Never can tell. Perhaps someone will know something. We might even find him in one.
Well, thank you. That's a mighty generous offer.
Oh, not really. He was a good friend to me in the old days. I'd like to do what I can.
Well, if you can spare the time, I'd certainly appreciate it.
All right. When do we start?
Whenever you're ready.
Oh, why not straight away?
Swell by me.
I'll just have a word with Dad first.
Okay.
He likes to know where I am during office hours, especially when I'm going on a pub crawl.
And so, in the company of George Atworth, Hunter embarked upon what can only be described as a marathon round of public houses and bars. In one respect, anyway, their task was lightened, for as Atworth later affirmed, Burden's drinking haunts were mostly confined to the West End area. They duly commenced at the Crown in the Charing Cross Road, which was just along from the offices of the cosmetics company where Burden worked, and which Mrs. Burden had mentioned as being an old favourite of her husband's.
Afternoon, Mr. Atworth. Haven't seen you about for a while.
Oh, my roving days are over, Harry. I've acquired a taste for the sheltered life.
Good for you. Well, what's it to be, gents?
Nothing for the moment, thanks. We're trying to locate an old customer of yours, a fellow by the name of Burden. Russ Burden, you probably remember him.
Remember him? I should say I do. I've jacked him out of here more times than I can count. Never put his nose inside the door he didn't cause some kind of trouble. Blimey, it was a real case, that one, and no mistake.
Well, have you seen him lately?
Oh, not for months. Wouldn't come back here, though, not after what happened.
What was that?
He got himself into a brawl with a couple of sailors. Bottles flying, table smashed, the lot. Over 30 quid's worth of damage done. Boss got the cops in. Carried him out feet first, and that was it. Never come near the place since.
It was the same story over and over again. Burden had been barred from entering almost every hotel he'd ever frequented. And this was before he'd entered the hospital for treatment. In a month following his discharge, he hadn't been sighted. In all, the two men checked at 34 different public houses, 7 clubs, and a number of drinking spots stretching from Park Lane to Trafalgar Square. But the results were negative in every case.
Oh, man, my dogs are killing me. Where are we going now?
Well, I'm hanged if I know. I'm licked, Bob. I just can't think of another place.
Maybe one further afield.
Well, look, I can't work any further. Well, Father, we can't check every pub in London.
No, I don't suppose we can.
Oh, he could have found his way anywhere. Around the East End, the dock area. Wouldn't have any trouble getting served there.
There's just one thing that doesn't figure.
Yeah? What's that? Dough, money. I mean, according to his wife, he drank away all the savings. Now, well, the guy, he just can't go on a prolonged jag with his pockets empty, can he?
Well, for all we know, he could be lying in some gutter.
No, not for long. He'd be picked up, and he hasn't been. I've checked with the police, the hospital. Oh, look, there's no point in you...
Listen, I've got it.
Hmm?
The flagpole.
What's that?
The flagpole. A little pub down in Cockspur Street. Oh, it clean slipped my mind. Come on, let's take a bus.
At the flagpole, their last hopes were dashed, when once again they were informed that some months previously, Russ Burden had been threatened with police action if he was ever again seen on those premises. Disconsolately, Hunter and his companion ordered two beers, which they felt they'd earned despite their failure. As the drinks were being placed in front of them by the barmaid, the agent felt a hand on his shoulder, and turning, he found himself confronted by a well-dressed, prosperous-looking man who addressed him apologetically.
I say, I'm awfully sorry to butt in like this, but am I to understand you're looking for Russ Burden?
Yeah, that's right, you know?
Yes, faintly. He was quite a regular here at one time.
Well, you haven't seen him recently, I suppose.
Well, yes. Yes, huh? As a matter of fact, I have. At least, I think it was him.
Yeah?
It was only last Friday. I dropped into a pub just near Notting Hill Gate Tube Station.
Yeah.
Coach and Four, I believe it's called. Anyway, just as I was leaving, I saw this fellow come in from the saloon. I was certain I knew his face, but I just couldn't place it. It didn't occur to me till later that it was Burden, or if it wasn't, it looked dashed like him.
Yeah. Well, was he drunk?
No, I really wouldn't know. I only caught a glimpse of him.
Coach and Four?
Mm-hmm. Something like that. Just along from the station, as I said, on the right-hand side going towards Shepherd's Bush.
With renewed hope, the two men journeyed by tube to Notting Hill Gate, where they had little difficulty in locating the Coach and Four, an old-style pub centrally situated on the corner of a busy intersection. No sooner had they entered the bar when Atworth gripped Hunter's arm, simultaneously emitting an excited cry of recognition.
Bob, it's him. Russ.
Where?
The fellow serving, behind the bar.
There could be no doubting it. In the photograph he'd seen, Hunter recognized the bartender at once as Russell Burden. Incredible as it seemed, the man who had been forcibly ejected from a score of drinking houses for drunkenness and disorderly behavior was now working in one, serving to others the very substance which had brought about his downfall.
Russ, you old son of a gun, I can't get over it.
A fellow I met in the hospital told me it was the one true test. The only way of finding out for sure if I was really cured. To work behind a bar for 6 weeks. To live with alcohol and not feel the need for it. And that's what I've been doing.
How come you landed the job?
Well, it was advertised in one of the newspapers. No one knew me here, so I applied and they took me on.
Where have you been living?
Here, on the premises. It was one of the conditions I agreed to when they employed me. You see, as well as being a barman, I'm a sort of general factotum. I have to be on hand at all times.
And the empty bottle of whiskey Frank found at your flat?
I poured it down the sink. Every last drop of it. Without batting an eyelid, moreover.
The big thing is, has it worked? Are you really cured?
You look at that hand. As steady as a rock. And that's how it's going to stay. Oh, it wasn't easy. For a while, I had some nasty moments. I was sure I'd go under. But I didn't. I stuck it out and now, for the first time, I can say without any hesitation that I'm on top. I've beaten it completely.
Well, I guess that calls for a little celebration, huh?
Definitely.
Drinks are on me, gentlemen.
Well, I'll make mine a tomato juice, neat.
I'll settle for a good, stiff lemon squash.
Coming up. And just to show you veterans I can hold my liquor, I'll have one of each.
Henry Simon returns to conclude this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
Russell Burden was indeed cured of the sickness that alcohol had brought upon him. On completion of his 6 weeks' term as a barman at the Coach and Four, he went to see his former employer, who, with the aid of Frank and Bob Hunter, he soon convinced that he was back on his feet again for good. His old job had been filled, but there was another one waiting for him, which he accepted gladly. He then went to his wife, who proved more than willing to return to him when she discovered the change he had undergone. This, indeed, was the Russell Burden of old, the reliable Russell Burden, who drank nothing stronger than lemon squash and tomato juice, and who, I am sure, would be only too ready to bear witness to that old Chinese proverb, a man takes a drink, the drink takes a drink, and then the drink takes the man. And now, this is Henry Simon, inviting you to meet me here again, and for the present, bidding you au revoir.